Good morning, Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN. With everything going on, I just did not have time to cover Dog Bite Prevention Week, which I typically do. But you know what? That's good for any week, and we will talk about dog bite prevention with the immediate past president of the American Veterinary Medical Association. Also, what do you do? I mean, you don't want fleas in your house. You don't want ticks on your dog. So what do you do? How do you choose a product when you cannot see your veterinarian, or can you? And we will talk to one of the world's experts who, in fact, is known as Dr. Flea. And dogs have a new job, which I'll talk about. They can actually sniff out COVID-19. It's incredible. Dr. John DeYoung is the immediate past president of the American Veterinary Medical Association. And Dr. DeYoung, I want to talk to you about dog bite prevention. I have that conversation about once a year with a veterinarian, often from the American Veterinary Medical Association. However, before I do that, something on everyone's mind, at least to date, what do we know about COVID-19 and our pets? Can we still play with the dog, let our dog share our bed at night, let our cat share our bed at night, and also purr in our ear and probably walk over our heads at 2 a.m? I mean, is that still is that still all okay?
Oh, it depends who you are. I don't think it's necessarily a good idea for pre-COVID-19 or currently during COVID-19's pandemic to have a dog licking you in the face, sleeping in your bed at night. But I have to respect individual pet owners on what they want to do. But I've seen over my career too many potential injuries that could have been prevented by not having a dog sleep in bed. But to get more specifically to COVID-19, it's important at this point in time to maintain, especially when you're outdoors and around other people and their dogs, because dogs want to socialize. Social distancing. I would probably urge people that, you know, they should be getting out to walk their dog. It's healthy for the dog. It's healthy for them. But not to necessarily let the dogs be pet by other people, because you don't know whether those people have been exposed or whether those people are already carriers or what have you of COVID-19. So it's a question of being wise with social distancing. Don't assume every dog wants to be petted, but use logic when it comes to this and avoid risky situations. You know, try and maintain the social distancing. From all we understand and know, dogs don't carry, per se, COVID-19 on their hair or what have you. And animals don't in general. So people don't need to worry about it. But since we're not 1,000% certain, there's been an obvious, well-known case of the tiger in the Bronx Zoo who tested positive for COVID-19 because they were exposed to a zoo worker that had COVID-19. And there have been 4 or 5 cases internationally where animals have tested positive but not known to transmit to humans.
Well,
so until we know more, be safe.
Yeah, and it's that part about not known to transmit to humans. First of all, in my mind, if you can count all the pets on one hand, with the now millions of people who have tested positive around the globe for COVID, never mind those who have had it that not tested positive, you know, and we're talking
right
about many, many, many animal-loving countries aside from the U.S., Britain, the U.K., Germany, Canada, Scotland, Ireland. I mean, I can go on, right? We're at France, clearly. We're Italy, where pets are very, very popular, and we have only a handful. So to me, that's a good sign. And what you said, I want to point, make a very strong point of. So even if they do have the infection, it doesn't mean they are infectious. And to me,
correct,
that's right. That's a very, very important point. I don't agree with you about the dogs in bed, but we could have that discussion another time.
Testing is basically antibody testing or PCR testing. And actually, in this country, thousands of dogs and cats have been tested, and
right,
none have been positive. I had to add that. I'm sorry.
No, I'm glad you did. I'm glad you did, because that's true, and that's a very important point. You know, I don't agree with you about dogs sleeping in bed, but I think we'll have that discussion another time. But I think maybe in part what you're referring to, I've been to veterinary schools, I've taught at veterinary schools, you know, and I've sat in on classes. Aren't I lucky, truly? And what you're taught as a young veterinarian or when you're in school is about basic One Health issues, and it's one thing to let the dog, what we call, kiss you, but it's another thing to have your mouth open when that happens. I mean, there are certain basics that veterinarians were taught in school that maybe the profession is kind of forgotten about because of the human-animal bond being so intense. And my guess is what you're getting at is let's maybe go back to those basics.
I think, well said, go back to basics. The reason I live in New England, where we have a lot of ticks, and one of my sons had Lyme disease when he was younger. You know, who knows whether he got the tick outdoors on his own or the dog was jumping on the couch or in the bed. So those are things that people need to think about, that there are various, you know, arthropod vectors and other things that people can be exposed to if the dog sleeps in bed. But again, I respect people's individual choices because the human-animal bond is so important. And One Health is really the way we're looking at the world in many ways now, or should be.
Yeah, I agree with that. And you'll be happy to know that later in the program, we're talking to Dr. Mike Dryden, veterinary parasitologist, who will tell us about new ways, or reasonably new ways, in which we can effectively prevent tick disease, which is something we need to do. We also need to prevent dog bites. And that's what you're really here to talk about. So let's begin. There are certainly too many dog bites. One bite is too many bites. Considering, though, we have 90 million dogs in America, far fewer dog bites, serious dog bites, where we require hospitalization than, say, require hospitalization from automobiles, as one example. So, you know, things are not horrible. And the one reason I think why the horrible stories make the newspaper is because it is news. It doesn't happen every day. Having said that, why not avoid if we can? Are most dog bites preventable?
Absolutely. I think many dog bites, if not most, are preventable. And it comes down to a lot of different things. It's responsible ownership, making sure that people properly socialize and train their dogs from the time they're puppies, supervising and watching their children, or watching the dog when it's outside, and making sure that people that want to pet your dog don't just come up and do so. Have the discussion first. And these are all things that would help to prevent a lot of dog bites. Another issue out there is that there are certain cities, towns, and individuals that at various times have gotten into the idea of breed-specific bans by legislation.
Mm-hmm.
And that's completely erroneous as well, because I don't think any breed should be targeted per se. I mean, everyone hears about pit bulls, but I remember early in my career, the number one biting dog in America was the Cocker Spaniel.
Right.
So a lot of it comes down to proper training. Of course, pit bulls get a bad rap. I've done a fair amount of interviews in Boston over the years about the fact that you can't blame the whole breed, that it's the way that they were trained and some of the aggression that was actually encouraged when the dogs showed even the mildest of aggression in play that led them to potentially be nastier. So a lot of dog bites, to be succinct, can definitely be prevented with good ownership, enforcement of animal control ordinances like leash laws, encouraging neutering, and again, socializing animals from the time they're early on, watching the children and watching adults, and also training properly.
Okay, so I want to go back to what you said about pit bulls and what we know today. And you may not know this about me, but I've testified many times. Not as much recently. I think people now understand far more. Maybe not in Denver, but far more than they have at any other time. You know, in Chicago, where I live, I don't think we'd see a pit bull ban now, because I know many aldermen, many have dogs you'd look at and say, that's a pit bull. The thing that we know today, first of all, what you said is absolutely true, but we also know that dogs we call pit bulls are, after all, only mixed breed dogs. So what are we taking here? We're taking a dog of mixed lineage and saying we're profiling something we don't even understand what we're profiling.
Well said.
Yeah. So, and I'm glad you brought that up, because I think that's very important, because I agree they get a bad rap. But you know who I think should get a bad rap at times? It's mom and dad, for not supervising, because so many bites happen to children. So many bites happen in a home where the children knows the dog, maybe even has grown up with that dog. And it happens because mom isn't watching or dad isn't watching. We either assume the dog's going to be good. And to me, sometimes it's amazing what dogs do tolerate. What do you think?
Oh, I think you're absolutely correct. If a child is unsupervised, first of all, if they're crawling on all fours and they're very, very young, the dog may not even fully understand what they're looking at. If that is not a human being, that's usually a biped and standing up. But if the child is grabbing the tail or grabbing the ears or putting their hand in the food bowl or trying to take food out of a dog's mouth and the parents aren't supervising, that can lead to a lot of problems. And so it's really important that mom and dad are watching the children at all times, because if there was something different, for example, you know, touching something in the house like an electrical cord, their voices would be raised and be much more stringent and enforcing the rules at home. But they think with a dog, oh, don't worry about it. But it can be prevented. So it really comes down to really responsible ownership of the parents around kids. And then the parents, when they're outside with people approaching their dog, other children, mm-hmm. other dogs, and other people that are adults.
All right. Well said, Dr. DeYoung. More information about all of this. I mean, we can't cover it all, but I'll tell you who has, and that's the American Veterinary Medical Association website, avma.org. Dr. DeYoung, I'll go home. I'll give it a try, but I'm telling you, my wife would rather have our dog in bed than me, I'm afraid. So, thank you very much. It's good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you as always, Steve. Thank you.
Next on Steve Dale's Pet World, well, we talked about fleas and ticks just a bit. Well, what do you do? How do you find that preventive right now with everything going on? And we'll talk about heartworm prevention as well with Dr. Michael Dryden. Thing about this radio show is we do get the best on the planet. That's what Dr. Mike Dryden is. If you're at a veterinary conference, guaranteed he's there. And he's there talking about fleas or ticks or heartworm. In fact, he's called Dr. Flea, professor at Kansas State University, Dr. Mike Dryden. Welcome to WGN Radio. How are you?
I'm doing great, Steve. And I'm glad you gave me a call this morning.
Well, it's always good to talk to you. And right now people are thinking, you know what? I'm in Chicago. It's not Florida. You know, it's not the tropics. I probably can go, I don't know, a couple of weeks at least, maybe even a month, without dealing with fleas or ticks or heartworm prevention for my dog or my cat, for that matter, or heartworm prevention. I suspect you think, well, that's not the way to go, but you tell me.
Well, Steve, that's certainly not the way to go. You know, one of the issues that we face, I'm down here in Kansas. You're up there in the Chicago area there, but it really doesn't make a whole lot of difference. We both live in what we could consider temperate climates, and we also recognize that we have warm summers and we have cold winters. But we also see, and this is increasingly the case over the last several decades, that it's really hard to judge. When is it going to get really cold in the fall, and when is it going to get warm in the spring? And that's the problem. When we try to seasonally time our flea and tick and heartworm preventions, it can be very, very difficult. You know, when does your mosquito season end? When does it begin? When are your ticks active? When are your flea active? And every year it's slightly different. And that's when pet owners get into trouble, is they try to seasonally time the administration of these medications, recognizing that not every year is the same. And that's the problem. You know, when does one start and one end? And so we find the best way to protect your pet is put them on year-round broad-spectrum parasite prevention. That way we're not trying to become Nostradamus and project into the future when things are going to happen.
But what if I've run out of whatever it is and order online or go to a big box store if I could find one that'll let me go inside it? And a lot of them are still open. So if I do that and just pick a product, is that a bad thing?
Yeah, today I think it is, Steve. We have clearly seen some issues, particularly in the flea arena, with the development of resistance to a lot of the older classes of insecticides. That's clearly the issue. And so we just can't rely upon them to be as effective as they once were. There are a whole array of new prescription products that you can get from your veterinarian that do a much better job of flea control and a remarkable job of tick control today. And also, all your heart preventative products really need, they were all prescription products anyway. So contact your veterinarian and get these products for your dog and for your cat and protect them.
Well, in fact, you talked about better flea protection. How about better tick protection as well? And, you know, many of us say, especially if you happen to live in the heart of Chicago, or if you live in an urbaner area like Naperville or Oak Park or even near downtown Skokie, for Christ's sakes. I mean, you're thinking that, all right, I'm all around concrete. There's no, there are not going to be any ticks around. I don't need to deal with this. Is that true?
No, it's not. And that's one of the things that's really been proven over the last several years. In fact, in the Chicago area, there was actually a publication that came out, I think two or three years ago now, where they went into a lot of the suburban parks in the Chicago area and actually looked for ticks, scientifically looked for ticks. And they found the tick that transmit Lyme disease, what we call Ixodes scapularis, or you call the deer tick, they actually found that tick in many of the metropolitan parks in the Chicago metropolitan area. It actually surprised a lot of people. And you'd say, well, how do those ticks get there? Well, there's a variety of ways. One of the things we've dramatically underestimated over the last several decades is the importance of basically migratory birds. What we now recognize is these birds move back and forth in their flyways. They drop, they pick up these ticks, they move on to locations, those ticks then fall off, and they drop off into these, you know, urban and suburban parks, as well as we recognize that things like raccoons and opossums and coyotes also can carry these ticks. So there's many places in urban areas today and suburban areas where these ticks are active, and it will surprise you. So you need to protect your pets from this scourge of ticks, and particularly ticks that transmit Lyme disease.
The scourge. You're the only guest I've ever had that frequently uses that term. I don't even know what that is. It sounds like a pirate would say something like the scourge. So, sir, the great news is that if I had been talking to you, I don't know, 10 years ago, you would have talked to me about what was then appropriate and somewhat successful ways of eradicating ticks and preventing tick disease where those ticks would fall off the pet soon enough. I suspect that things have changed dramatically.
They have. They clearly have. And the area where the things have changed the most dramatically is with the new class of compounds that we broadly call the isoxazolines. And you see them advertised on TV all the time as NexGard and Bravecto and Credilio and Simparica. And there's also an array of products as well for our cats as well. We've now got, you know, Bravecto for cats. We've got Revolution Plus for cats. So we've got these array of products out there that do a remarkable job. They are systemic compounds that are extremely effective in killing fleas, but particularly they do a great job of killing ticks. And there's just a wealth of data now available to show that they're incredibly effective, in fact, far more effective than what we used to have.
Are you concerned about the deleterious effects that people write about online about using these products?
I'm really not. And there are several things you have to look at. You know, first of all, you know, I'm a pet owner, I'm a veterinarian, and I understand that we've got to use products that are very, very safe. This class of chemistry we're talking about, the isoxazolines, is now the number one selling class of flea and tick products in the world. They have replaced everything else globally. So, yes, can there potentially have an adverse event in a dog or cat? Yes. I mean, anything we use has particularly some risk. But the risk is incredibly small, and we recognize that. The number of animals that have adverse events, even the seizure episodes, is extremely rare. And that's recognized globally by all the regulatory agencies in all the countries. But you pick any situation, whether it's Canada, the United States, Japan, Australia, New Zealand, you know, all the countries in Europe, you pick those. In all those countries, the number one selling products are these new isoxazolines, and this is globally. It's really a remarkable testament to their effectiveness and their safety.
Mm-hmm. All right, so what we haven't talked about yet is heartworm disease. That's carried by mosquitoes. It can impact dogs or cats. It can be deadly, but yet half the people with a dog and far more than half with a cat, I don't even know what the number is for cats, don't use any product or use them so inconsistently that they might as well not be using them. We only have like less than a minute left here, but how important is it that we protect our pets against heartworm?
It's extremely important. Heartworm disease can clearly be deadly for dogs and cats. you're talking worms anywhere from 10 to 12 inches long living in their pulmonary arteries and their heart. The problem we face compared to flea and tick control is fleas and ticks we see. Heartworms we don't see until it's too late, and your dog or cat now has basically a lung or a heart problem. And that's why we don't administer them as regularly as we should. But dogs and cats need to be on heart prevention. Yeah, out of sight, out of mind, I'm sorry, but your dog and your cat has now got 12-inch worms living in their heart. That's not good.
No, it isn't. You're the best. Dr. Mike Dryden, the scourge of my career. I don't know if I mean that. Thank you so much. I don't even know what it means. I have to look up the word. Thank you, Dr. Dryden.
Take care, Steve.
Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN. It's incredible, astounding what dogs can sometimes do. We will amaze you next. Oh, my gosh. I can't count how many times I've interviewed Vicky Santo, Ron Santo's widow, over the years. And apparently, I was a part of the motivation for them starting the Ron and Vicky Santo Diabetic Alert Dog Foundation, where dogs are trained to detect diabetic crashes and spikes, especially for young children. This changes their lives. It's an amazing organization. Dogs can do that. They generally can be fairly easily trained to do that. You know, it's amazing, but maybe not so amazing when you think about what else they can do. So also, in part, this radio show has something to do with all this. The Ovarian Cancer Symptom Awareness Organization, a nonprofit based right here in the Chicago area, they began to study. This is amazing. They began to study dogs detecting ovarian cancer. PenVet is doing that. And we've talked about it a lot on the air. I have a friend who passed away of ovarian cancer, and she began to fund this. She was a colleague who wrote about pets, authored books about pets, and at one point in her career had a radio show, like this radio show about pets, based out of Boston. And that fund has raised and continues to raise, incidentally, and please help them, money so this can be done. Ovarian cancer is one of those cancers that, unless detected early, it's a tough go, you know? So the problem is detecting it early when you're asymptomatic. How do you do that? How would you know? So these dogs will hopefully, there's not going to be a dog in every doctor's office. That would be nice, but that's not going to happen. But what could happen out of this, and probably will, according to Dr. Cynthia Otto, who's been on the show before, is that there will be a blood test. I mean, that's amazing, all because of what these dogs are able to do. Well, now dogs in the UK are being trained to detect COVID-19, and it's working. These are dogs or a lab that previously trained dogs to detect malaria successfully, and now they're doing this. And again, there's not going to be a dog in every office. There's not going to be a dog replacing a test that can happen for COVID-19. But what will happen here, probably like the U.S. Department of Agriculture Beagle Brigade, the beagles that you see at the airport sniffing for drugs, there will be a contingent over time of dogs at international airports sniffing for COVID-19. Pretty incredible, right? Next week, we will talk to you about your dog is outside more. We're going to keep your dog safe with Dr. Heather Lenzer on Steve Dale's Pet World.